Welcome to the Kayak Mainline Podcast. David's no officer, and I'm certainly no gentleman. And folks, you've got nowhere else to go.
All right. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, Damen und Herren, Monsieur and Mademoiselle, welcome to Kayak Mainline number 9. That's right, for you Beatles fan, that would be number nine. I am the immortal and the irreverent Kelly Blades, and with me as always is the handsome and totally sweet David Johnson. David, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm busier than a 10-peckered billy goat, but I couldn't be happier. How was your holiday season? It is now 2013. For those of you playing along in the home game, January 2013. You haven't heard from us for a while, but we've been there lurking around, just letting you enjoy the holidays. But David Johnston, damn it, how was your holiday?
It was busy. Yeah, it was good. I traveled to my parents' house in Ottawa, which is about 5 hours away from where I am now. So we're there for a couple days. And like probably yourself, anytime you go home, you realize you just can't go home. Mm. So yeah, no, it was fun.
Yeah, you get to
day 5 and you're like, all right, I'm ready to go home.
Yeah, my aunt used to coin the very popular phrase, company is like, you know, food in the refrigerator. After 3 days, it just is bad, you know?
That's very good.
But here's the thing about me being home. I live in the small town I grew up in. When people say, yeah, you're a big city dweller in Toronto, and not me. I live in the same small town, the same small community I grew up in, which I vowed I'd never do, and I still do. So when they say you can't go home again, actually, I live like 10 minutes away from my home.
I mean, then again, my mother-in-law, she lives in the same building as us here, two floors down. So I see her like every day.
Your mother-in-law lives there?
Yeah.
Why didn't you? We've known each other for years. You've never told me that factoid?
Oh, we keep it a secret.
I would imagine, yeah. Well, and I happen to know that you actually moved one floor up, didn't you?
Well, we moved from all the way from the 5th to the 8th.
Oh, I thought, okay, so you like skipped her. You're like, screw you, lady. You're always holding this above us. You live on 6. I'm going all the way up to the 8th, baby. Take it. Is that what you did? Tell me that's what you did.
Yeah, pretty much. So, okay. She's a regular at our house.
And when you finally moved in, closed everything, you know, got all the boxes unpacked, did you just open up your door and go, take that, lady?
I'm getting out of your neighborhood.
Yeah.
One of those. Yeah. So how about yourself? What'd you do?
Oh, we had a very, very, very fabulous Christmas, New Year's around here. It was pretty low key, but it was good. My kids, I hate to say this to the listening audience, but my kids kind of cracked the code. Not even kind of. My son, 8-year-old son, cracked the code of the Santa Claus mythos. So we still do celebrate Christmas, and we quite enjoy it, and we pay homage to the mighty, mighty Santa Claus around here. They just don't have any illusions as to who's actually sneaking down the chimney these days.
Oh, no.
So it actually made things very, very convenient for us. My son just said, you know, Santa, wink. This is kind of what I'd like for Christmas. And so it worked out really, really well. We had we had a good time, very, very good time. It started off very slow. Like we didn't get our tree up, which most people around here get their tree up like the day after Thanksgiving.
Okay.
We got it up, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Friday or Saturday before Christmas.
Nice.
Christmas was on, as you know, Tuesday.
Do you have your tree going right through till March now?
You know, it might happen that way.
Okay.
My wife was going to take it down and then decided it was such a cute little tree. Mal and I went out to go get it, and we wanted a Charlie Brown Christmas tree, the little ugly nappy one.
Okay, nice.
You know? But he just picked one out, and it is really, it's small, but it's just gorgeous.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and we put way too much stuff on it, and it just looked like just the perfect Christmas tree.
That's fantastic. Nice.
So we're gonna
have you been doing, now what's going on? You have snow. Are you frozen in now?
Yeah, we got about 4 or 5 inches.
Okay.
Just before, on Christmas Eve into Christmas. So we had a white Christmas, like the stories say, the perennial white Christmas. And the kids got to go sledding and all kinds of nonsense. So
have you been doing any outdoor paddling related stuff?
Oh. No, I have been keeping this a complete secret, and here I am. I'm going to drop this bomb right here, right now. You know this. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons, folks, I do apologize why we haven't been recording lately is I have joined the fire department here in my little small town. And no, I'm not looking for a career change. I am just helping out the community. Now, that was my altruistic goal, is to just help out the community. It turns out in Michigan, if you want to be a firefighter, you have to be fully trained. It doesn't matter if you're part-time like myself, paid on call, volunteer, or full-time, you have to have the same training.
Right.
So the last 4 months, I've been secretly doing EMT school. So with any luck, I will be taking my national registry here soon, and I will be a fully functioning EMT, and I'm going on Monday at fire school.
Mm-hmm.
So I will be doing that. So I haven't been paddling. I've actually been studying my butt off, because it turns out I have no aptitude whatsoever for medical stuff. If any of the people who I'll be running on as patients are listening, sorry.
It's the old, I guess that motto of fake it till you make it doesn't quite work for your...
You know, it actually does, because you always have some people who know what's going on. But, you know, you can't always walk into a scene and go, shock, matter, just shock.
Wow. So that's, so you've been in school the whole time?
Have been.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been paddling for us then.
Where you been paddling?
We have been, I was out last week. No, Saturday before Christmas. So I was out with my buddy Eric. We were paddling around. It's because we have here in Toronto, everything on Lake Ontario stays open all the time, year round, pretty much, except for just a little bit. We can always find open water. So we were out cruising around for the day doing that, and we had a great time. Not, of course, I mean, the advertised winds are going to be huge, but we right. get out there and, you know, we're talking 6 inches.
Yeah.
In our head, we're tearing down to the water going, it's going to be like 12 feet.
Doing the Baywatch run with your kayaks and...
Yeah, the wind was blowing out at the wrong angle, so...
Wait, did they prosecute those little bastards who stole your kayak?
Oh, I hadn't heard anything. I tried to find out in the news. They wouldn't. I couldn't get any details.
I bet you didn't even check in. You haven't been checking in on our Florida guy. Yeah.
I was actually thinking about him about 2 weeks ago. I thought, what was happening? And I tried to find some info, but
you suck. As our
the Google News had nothing.
Well, that's it. That's what you're doing. You're supposed to call down and harass them.
Mm. You know. Well, then again, you know, I was using my phone searching for the story while my kids were opening up stocking gifts Christmas morning. I was like, go away, kids. I got to do research.
Well, that's the appropriate time. Fantastic.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm dedicated to this, even to Christmas morning at 6 a.m.
I'm glad. I didn't even think about it on Christmas. I got to be honest. The podcast was the farthest thing from my mind. Point. But speaking of the podcast, you know what we got to do? I know what we're going to do. We're going right into some news.
It's time for the Kayak Mainline News. Yes, your source for news all over the world, down the street or just outside your door.
We have a bunch of good news that I was able to dig up.
We've scoured the internet, folks, to find out some really good stories. And unfortunately, we couldn't find any, but we got some in the interim that might be interesting to us.
Well, we'll make them interesting. And what do we got here? So my first story, I'll read you the headline. Blind adventurer trains for his scariest challenge yet.
This is awesome.
Such a cool story.
It's a feel-good story, but it's also a weird... I don't even know how to put it. I want to make fun of this story.
Well, you can in some areas. So here it is. So Eric Wyhenmayer, who I had to phonetically spell it out because I couldn't figure it out at all. So he was the first blind person to climb Mount Everest. And yep. He's got a new goal to kayak down the Colorado River.
Mid-2013, this gentleman wants to go cruising down the river. Now, yes, you heard it right. He is a blind fella. He is lacking sight, and he wants to run the Colorado River. Now, for those of you who paddle whitewater, sea kayak, getting out in challenging conditions, you understand that picking a line visually is one of the first things you assess when you're doing this whole thing. You have to look and see where you want to go. That makes it really challenging when you can't see anything.
Yeah, so he's been training with a guy at the U.S. National Whitewater Center, and so they've developed, when they first started in some of the smaller class 1, class 2, they had Eric would paddle in the front, and the training guy would be in the boat right behind him, and sure. He would, you know, yell and they had to deal with they had codes like small right and small left, which meant turn your boat 90 degrees. And if you had to do a hard right or hard left, that was like 180 degrees. So he was able to kind of visually travel his way down. But the key thing is now they're in stuff that the roar is way bigger than they can even just yell it. So yeah, we're trying to sort out some of those.
You can't even hear the muffled screams of the dead on that, you know. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah.
And he's a blind, but I mean, good for him for doing it. You shouldn't let any, you know, being the son of a woman who is a quadriplegic, I grew up with that whole whole disability thing. I don't even know how to, I normally don't put it that polite, folks, let me just say that for the record. You know, growing up in the 70s, we didn't say polite things, 70s and 80s, but that whole disability thing held, you know, I watched people get held back by disabilities. And my mom, who is a quadriplegic, you know, she did just about as much as you can do with no arms and no legs. It was pretty crazy. And she'd, yeah, she was game. So it's great that this guy, just because he's blind, I mean, that's one sense, no big deal. I mean, I've been running whitewater with no sense.
Well, here was the question that I was wondering is, so is the Colorado River, like, it's big water, so it's really steep waves and really big holes, but is it as technical as other ones, or do you get a good line and just go straight and hope for the best? Like, how is it paddled?
We should interview one of our whitewater guys. I bet I can get Facili on the line. Mm-hmm. And see what he, because I'm sure he's paddled the Colorado. I have not paddled the Colorado.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you exactly what it's like. But, you know, if it's big pool and drop out west kind of stuff, yeah, you pick a line and you go, but there's still subtlety that has to be taken into account. You've still got to be able to see where you're going and make little micro moves.
Right, so you don't get hit sideways. And
right, think about this. You're going down and you're starting to go off the rails. The first thing you do in whitewater, I don't know if you know this, the first thing you do in whitewater, if you're going offline, if you can get to it, what do?
Look to it.
Well, you
look in that direction.
You don't look at what you want to be away from.
Oh, okay. I thought it was like you look in the direction you want to go. We're talking the opposite side of it. Okay.
Right. Yeah. If you can possibly help it, you grab an eddy.
Right.
Right. You catch an eddy and you reassess where you're at and take a little break. This guy can't see any of those.
Yeah. I guess the whole thing, they don't have dates set. Sometime, because I think it'll depend
on. But I guarantee you, folks, that David is going to stay on this as well as he stayed on. Florida guy getting shot in the butt and his stolen kayak.
Well, I guess it's touch and go. So hopefully it'll happen this summer. I think that's the plan. And I think they're trying to sort out permits. That's what I remember reading at some point. So,
cool.
We got a next story?
We got a next story, and I'm going to move down here a little bit. Let's do a little feel good move. Little feel good story. Wes Hansen snags record for kayaking. Hansen, I should say, snags record for kayaking the Amazon River.
Yeah, tell me about it.
So Wes Hansen from Texas, West by God, or from, is he from West by God, Texas? We don't know. We don't know where he's from.
He's somewhere in Texas.
It's not
Austin. A place. Yeah, he's from the Austin area.
The what?
Austin.
I love Austin. Austin's fantastic. I would, if I lived in Austin, I would never leave, certainly to go to the Amazon. Screw that.
Yeah.
I would stay in Austin. It is a fantastic city. But what he did is he completed what only seven other kayakers have done. He kayaked the entire Amazon River. Now, the Amazon River, as far as I know, is, you know, fairly long, right?
It's at least 10 kilometers.
At least. I'm even going to go out on a limb and say it's over 50 kilometers. No, it took the man 111 days and 4,100 miles. How many is that in kilometers?
I don't know. 22?
9,000?
Yeah, something like that.
9,000 kilometers. Yeah. That's huge.
It's pretty crazy, eh?
90 days of that was paddling in up to class 5 whitewater. 90 frickin' 3 months of class 5.
Man.
Yeah,
that's
dude.
Quite a... Well, you'd have some really pipes, huge pipes at the end of that one.
I think you got to be smart.
Yeah.
You got to be smart and hire a guide. I think you would have to hire, like, you know, when dudes go up to, and this is one of my pet peeves from way back, when people would do, and I'm sure the blind guy didn't do this. I should probably refer to him as his name and not the
Eric Blind Guy.
Letters on that one. But, you know, when guys go up Everest, they always take, like, their Sherpa guide. And these guys are all dressed in their Patagucci and their mountain hardware and all this kind of stuff. And they get up there and the guides are wearing like a cardigan sweater and tire rubber sandals, you know, and they get up right to summit and they're like, all right, Sherpa guy. Oh, you know what? I forgot my air pack. And the Sherpa guy's like, nobody's smoking a cigarette. He runs back down, runs back in the air tank. And then Whitey goes up, you know, the next 30 feet and says, I've summited Everest. I think that's what this guy probably did is he hired some local Amazonian dude who did all the paddling for him.
He just had like a parasail umbrella.
Completely speculative and probably wrong. Keep that in mind.
No, this guy, I think that's an accurate picture.
I'm just saying we're going to get sued.
Well,
so I like this though. I mean, this strikes me close to home, you know, being from the Detroit area.
Right.
Says we finally get down to the flat water area where there's no real water hazards, but then we get held up by gunpoint 5 times.
It's pretty crazy. In fact, I actually remember reading this following story, and I didn't make the connection to this, but I remember reading about it when he got held up sometime in November-ish, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And he almost got left for dead at one point. It was pretty crazy, and it was something like he got held up in a short period of like 10 days, like twice. It was like, oh, here we go again.
That just sucks. You should be able to. I've always said this about speeding tickets and about parking tickets and about being robbed. Okay. Mm-hmm. You get robbed. You get a speed. Let's say you get a speeding ticket.
Okay.
You get a speeding ticket for, 80 miles in a 70 mile an hour zone or whatever that is in kilometers. And, you get issued the ticket by the cop. You should be able to drive that speed for the rest of the day because you're paying for it. And the next cop pulls you over, you could just hand him the ticket and say, look, I already got bumped for this. And the cop should go, all right, proceed, have fun. You should double up. I think that's double dipping. Okay. When this guy gets robbed on the Amazon, you know, you give him all of your Amazonian denarii or whatever you give, right? And they should offer you a sign that says, hi, my name is Wes, and I've been robbed once today.
Let me keep going.
And goes, you, did you get robbed? Yeah, I got robbed. Okay, have a good day, citizen.
But it's pretty crazy. I mean, 4,000 miles, that's definitely more than an afternoon's paddle.
1,100 miles.
Yeah, 41, yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, there you go. Good for you, Wes Hansen in Texas, Austin, Texas. And, enjoy that, being in Austin. By the way, if you want to get in touch with us, if you want to ask us questions, and we have gotten some questions, and folks, if you've sent questions in, we have not forgotten about you. We're just getting back into the swing of things for 2013. But folks, if you have questions, please email us at kayakmainline@gmail.com, or you can hit us at Twitter at kayakmainline on the Twitter feed. And any other ways you can get in touch with us, David, do you think?
People are always welcome to visit my website, paddlinghq.com.
Wait a minute. Is that breaking news? I thought instructor before.
So paddlinginstructor.com. Just it switched over. I changed I rebranded it. So now it's Paddling Headquarters.
It is the headquarters for paddling.
Yeah, paddlinghq.com.
Right. So David, tell me you're going to tell me about what you found out just this very day.
Yeah. So here's what I learned. So here's your fun fact for the day. And I'll read it out and then we can break it down. So today I learned in the 1700s, it was common practice to pump smoke up someone's bum to resuscitate them after they've drowned. Bellows were lined against canoes and lakes like life ring buoys are today.
Tell me more about this, because I thought when you were saying this, the funny thing is I thought you said it was common practice to pump smoke up somebody's bum, or as we say in the U.S., butt.
Well, that's true. Yeah. We keep it. It's a bum here.
It is a bum.
Yeah. So that was the thing. So there was it. You'd have these smoke enemas. So they'd haul you in. So you're out drowning. Work with me on this. So you're out drowning. Sure. I go out and I save you, haul you back in. And to get you breathing again, I'm going to inflate you from the rear end, but with smoke in particular. So we don't have those today for some strange reason. They would have these bellows and you could quickly grab one. And I don't know whether you'd have to light a fire and get it going. I don't know. But yeah, there we go. So that's it was the fun fact for today.
Now, I have to ask, My assumption in all of this is that, okay, so you're lying there dead. You've inhaled water, H2O, not oxygen, but H2O. So you have water in your lungs.
Right.
And you're laying there. You are not breathing. You are pulseless. You are lifeless. All of a sudden, somebody gets the bright friggin' idea to take a hot bellows full of smoke and stuff it up your butt. Pretty much that's going to pull me out of death before anything want not touched by the,
it'll definitely give you gas, that's for sure.
The threat of it that pulls you out of death. Actually the action.
Well, what I think you should do is that next time you're with your firefighter guys, you should bring this up and suggest that we should research it more.
Okay, you had to bring that up, and I wasn't gonna bring this.
I had to go there.
Because now I have to say something about that. So with in the EMT class, we were learning about hypoglycemia and hyperglycemia.
Okay.
Which is?
One of them's not enough sugar.
Right. Low and high blood sugar.
Right.
Okay. Now, if you have hypoglycemia, which is low blood sugar, what you need to do, it's pretty easy to counteract. What you need to do is you need to get some glucose into their system.
Okay.
Usually, I could give you a whole holy host of how you give glucose intravenously or blah, blah, blah. Basically, the easiest way is you show up, somebody has low blood sugar, you test the blood sugar, and then you give them a candy bar.
Okay.
And you say, eat this candy bar. And if they are conscious and, kind of got their thoughts with them, they eat the candy bar. In a few minutes, they feel better. Everything's cool. But this is only if the person has it can take something, so they're breathing and they're aware. Plus, they don't have any altered mental status.
Okay.
So they're within their mental bounds and they can breathe, because you don't want to stick anything in somebody's mouth who's not breathing.
It's generally a bad thing.
So if they are like laid out, they're breathing, but they're not conscious.
Okay.
You can give them the honey bear.
Okay. I think I know where we're going.
Do you?
Well, I don't know. Walk me through it.
I think you do. I think. Where we're going with this. So one of the other ways you've got orally, you can administer drugs. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
And then you can also do it anally.
Mm.
So you take a honey bear like you would find on the grocery shelf.
Okay.
You uncork that bad boy.
Okay.
And you give him the honey bear.
Really?
Really. And thing when we were talking about this blowing smoke up someone's ass thing earlier, which I think is where the term comes from. Now that I'm looking at this, I was thinking honey bear, and I thought, I can't bring it up, can't be that nerd. And now here you go, I've spoken about the honey bear.
I'm happy to have opened that door for you. All right, so that's the so that's that fun fact. I got a quick one here before you, and then I think you got one more story. Eh? Kayaks allegedly bring big bucks via fraud. So it's an interesting story. So a kayak manufacturer in Perth back about a month ago, a couple was working there, and they defrauded this company they stole about $22,000. It's kind of an interesting way that they embezzled this money. Well, embezzling? No, stole.
Stole, yeah.
Yeah. So they reprogrammed the credit card debit machine. So rather than money going into the owner's bank account, it was going into their own bank account.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of a, it's a bit of a feel-good story.
That's sort of like Office Space, where all the excess pennies go into a certain account.
Oh, right, right.
Is that what we're thinking?
Yeah, I think it was something like that. And so they skimmed it off, and for a period of, it was over a period of, I think, about 6 months. But what's interesting about it is, so they stole this money, which they put into a first bank account, and then they split it up into two different ones after that. It's so international espionage. And to try to hide the money. But they also think that they stole up to about $500,000 of inventory. So they're not 100% sure whether it's all to them.
Right.
But they're down that much inventory, in which I think that's a lot of inventory to try to walk out the door.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
Well, and you realize, as we all do, this is kayaking we're talking about. This is not like, the Vegas movie. What was that called? With the Brad Pitt and the George Clooney.
The casino.
Yeah. Yeah. Where
this
is not breaking into casino. This is not even breaking into like a 7-Eleven.
Right.
Might have some. This is a kayak store.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing. It's like, well, what are you stealing? That's going to get you $500,000 worth of stuff. I mean, that's, you know, 100,000 kayaks, you know? So
it's like, how are you going to work? Yeah. As a guy who owns a kayak shop, how do you not miss, or how do you miss $500,000 in inventory being gone?
Yeah. So there you go. So that, fraud in the outdoor industry.
We get it. There you go. You know what we don't have any yet though?
What?
Some animal news.
Yeah, what do you got for me?
Well, I have a good one. Actually, you have this one, but you gave it to me, and I'm going to use it. I'm running with it. Okay. Running with it like a thief in the night. So this back in December, as it turns out, like, you know, many Pacific seaside towns will find near Malibu, Southern California, SoCal, whatnot, you got a whale that washes up on shore.
Okay.
It's a terrible thing when a whale washes up on the shore. And normally people get out there. Have you seen this on TV where people get out and they try to like pour water on it and they need to save the whales because the whale is beautiful and majestic and things like that.
Mm, yeah. And everybody's all sobbing. And they, yeah, I know what you're talking
about. Each other's hands and sing Kumbaya and talk about the State of the Union and all that kind of stuff. Well, this one happened to wash up and it's a rotting whale carcass, right? So it stinks to all get out, and it's a stone's throw from multi-million-dollar Malibu houses of some of the richest and most famous stars. So in, right now, the whole thing, the whole vibe just changes, right?
Mm.
So
now, who are the stars, though?
Well, you know, I just got a short list here. We've got Barbara Streisand, who sure is probably pretty tolerant of everything.
Mm, yeah.
She's not one of the major divas of our era, right?
Mm, no.
You got Martin Sheen.
Mm, diva.
Well, he might be a diva too. No, Martin Sheen's pretty cool. I think.
Okay.
But you also got Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
And so these three people, you know, just to name a few.
Right.
Right. It's a 40-foot whale, right? So it's not like it's not like a tuna. We're talking 40 feet of just ginormous whale rotting.
No, that's no perch.
No,
that's for sure.
It is not. It is not a rainbow trout. It is pretty big. And they suspect that it was killed by a passing boat and it just, you know, kind of rolled up there. And it's too big and too rotten to pull out to sea because it falls apart, right?
Right.
So it's kind of got to let nature do its work. So it's stinking up these multi-million-dollar houses. So we don't hear these stories about how people are gathering around and singing Kumbaya and all that kind of crap. You're now hearing about these divas all getting crabby about how they got a ginormous fish. Like it's like a prison. In your neighborhood, everybody wants another prison built someplace else.
Not the old NIMBY. No whales in my backyard. Exactly.
No whales in my backyard.
Send them somewhere else. Now, do you remember the old exploding whale story from the 70s?
Don't remember the I should know this.
No, it's good. Because I found this story, and then I remembered at one point a couple of years ago hearing about this story. So, and it kind of travels around, you know, if you're up on your whale beachings, you probably have heard about it before. So Florence, Oregon, 1970, big dead sperm whale rolls up on this beach and is dead and they don't know what to do with it. And normally what they do is they either dig a hole, shove it in the hole, tow it off, and somebody's decided, let's get some dynamite. So you know where this is going.
I do. I'm very excited about this.
But the best part about it is, so they have this guy, and it's if you can search for it, it's on YouTube. So they pack it full of dynamite, but for some reason they just trying to see it. There's a Wikipedia page for it, and So a guy calculates, so how much dynamite do they need, and so it'll put it in smaller pieces, in which case they can either bury it easier. But somebody said it needs 20 sticks of dynamite.
That's too many.
No. So what they did is they weren't listening. They packed it full of 20 cases of dynamite.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So
I think
we're talking
20 is too many.
Well, I'm no dynamite expert, but in my head, yeah. So it's 80 feet long.
Talking Wile E. Coyote at this point.
Yeah, 40 feet long. 45 foot, that's how it was. So they pack it full of dynamite, and they got a guy who's, you know, like Les Nessman. That's what he kind of looks like. And he's standing there, and they're recording this thing, and we're here on the beach, and they've put dynamite in it. And it's really only the one guy who knows that they've put way too much dynamite in. So the camera's rolling, and they go boom, and the thing goes off like a nuclear bomb. Sure. But because it went so high in the air, all these chunks are flopping down and are basically all land in the parking lot. And so everybody's running for their lives because now it's huge chunks of blubber, like 15, 20 pound pieces are falling, and they just crushed all these cars.
Nice.
That's awesome. That's a great piece. So then the whole story afterward was just like filming the parking lot of just like whale guts.
So everywhere. If you find this clip, can you put it on Paddling HQ website?
Yeah, totally.
All right.
Yeah, guys. I'll move it over. It's a great little story. Yeah,
if you want to check this out, go to paddlinghq.com, David's site, and yeah, check that out because that sounds awesome.
Yeah, everybody loves a good whale blowing up.
Everybody loves stuff blowing up and whales.
Yeah.
And when you put those two together, it's great. The only thing else you need is like a honey bear.
we have no footage of that.
We don't have any footage of that. But you know what we do have? We've been talking about the Pacific Ocean. We've been talking about California. I think we need a little interview with Sean Morley, the organizer of the Golden Gate Sea Kayak Symposium. What do you think, David?
I'm jiggy with that.
You can follow us on Twitter at Kayak Mainline. Or if you're old school and like to email, that's kayakmainline@gmail.com. kayakmainline@gmail.com or Twitter feed Kayak Mainline.
So welcome back to Kayak Mainline. I'm here with Sean Morley. He's the organizer of the Golden Gate Sea Kayak Symposium. Welcome to Kayak Mainline.
Thanks, David. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, well, thank you. So tell me about yourself. What do you do for a living during the day?
So right now I'm mostly a full-time daddy and a part-time sea kayak instructor for California Canoe and Kayak.
How long have you been doing that?
I've been working for CCK, California Canoe and Kayak, for I guess 3 to 4 years now, on and off.
Okay.
During the summer season I'll work full-time in the retail store and on the water. And then during the winter months, I tend to leave the retail side and just work on the water.
Okay. And you enjoy that?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, obviously I love the teaching, but it also allows me to spend a bit of time with my kids, which I'm very lucky to be able to do.
Well, that's great. Now, with that, do you travel a lot with that, or are you mainly around the home?
Yeah, my traveling days have been pretty restricted since the kids came along.
No, that's shocking.
Yeah, exactly. My daughter's 5 and a half and my son's 3 and a half. So, since they've been around, my ability to travel has been fairly limited. Okay. But I have managed to go to some symposiums and do a few shorter trips. But mainly I'm teaching in and around San Francisco Bay.
So now what did you do before? Have you always been teaching? Like what other jobs have you had before teaching kayaking?
Well, before I moved to the U.S., in the United Kingdom, I was a police officer for 14 years.
Really?
And didn't really teach other than, casually for fun, maybe for my local club. But yeah, I didn't really get into instructing in any serious way until I moved to the United States and wanted to work within the paddle sports industry.
What pulled you over here? Like, cause that's quite a career shift for you.
Some of us, should we just say I met a girl.
Oh, yes.
And now my wife and the mother of my children.
Wow.
So, yeah, I came over for a surf kayak competition.
Okay.
In March of 2006. I came over for the Santa Cruz Kayak Surf Festival and met Gina, who was also competing at the event. She's a surf kayaker and whitewater kayaker.
Okay.
And we obviously hooked up, and shortly afterwards I ended up moving here.
Wow. So yeah. Now when you in California, when you look at cops, do you say, I would not want your job at all over here? Or do you go, oh, I know exactly what you're doing?
It's a very different culture, both, in terms of the type of people that, the type of communities that you're policing. But also the policing culture is quite different. It's a very different style of policing.
Right.
And, never say never, I guess. I mean, I'm 47 now, so...
You could have like another 30 years of policing. You could easily do that.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. As I say never, but I've managed to avoid it up to now.
Wow. Well, that's really interesting. I could never be a cop. I'll tell you that right now. Too scared of people. I think that's probably what it comes down to.
Yeah, well, there's definitely it's definitely a challenging challenging business to be in.
Interesting. So you're planning events. You guys run the Golden Gate Sea Kayak Symposium. Tell me about that.
Right. Well, this was really the idea of myself and Jen Kleck,
okay,
who runs Aqua Adventures in San Diego. She's also a BCU Level 5 coach. And she had the very similar idea to mine in running a skill symposium in and around the Golden Gate. And so we put our heads together, came up with this idea. But really, it wasn't until Matt Palmarello moved to the Bay Area from San Diego that the event became a reality. And Jen helped us with the first year, and then Matt and I have been organizing it ever since. This will be our fifth year this year.
Fifth year. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
He was definitely one of the early forerunner events in North America for rough water paddle symposiums.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely saw the potential, the opportunity for an event at that location. It's such a spectacular location.
Mm.
But also we deliberately chose to do it in the winter.
Okay.
Because we were very mindful that, the places on in the Midwest and on the East Coast were pretty much frozen up this time of year.
Right.
And this was a great opportunity for those folk to come and paddle, in rough water without any ice.
And do you get a lot of people who fly into the event?
We do. We'd obviously love more.
Yeah.
We're definitely trying to make it as international an event as possible, and get people from, across North America. And we've certainly had people, a lot of people from the East Coast, from the Midwest and from Canada. But, of course we'd love more. I think that's one of the beauties of symposia like this is it can attract people from all over the world. And, really the inspiration for this, comes not just from the location, but, also having attended the Anglesey Sea Kayak Symposium. And, that's such a fantastic international event and a great rough water skills event.
Now, in the last 5 years even go farther back a bit, the sea kayak can certainly change considerably. I see that in the Great Lakes quite a bit. People's skills are way better than they were, and there's a bigger market for rough water events,
right,
or people willing to kind of push the limit,
yep,
or think about boats more than just paddling out in the back pond, kayaking and that. Have you noticed that same trend?
Absolutely. And, I'm not going to claim credit for it, but, I think a timing issue where, boat designs have improved considerably and, in that rough water realm.
Right.
The boat designs now, boats like the P&H Delphin and the Dagger Alchemy and the other boats that are great for paddling in rough water, have come onto the scene at the same time as, events like ours have, come into existence. And it's just a great symbiotic relationship, really. The event has really pushed the envelope of rough water skills here on the West Coast. Although you have to remember that, folk like the Tsunami Rangers have been doing, crazy stuff within the rock gardens for several decades.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. But, the difference with that, for, say, the last 15 years, 10 of those years, everyone just thought those guys were crazy. And now they're like, ooh, I want to do that. I remember when I first got into kayaking, I remember watching some of those videos and thought, oh, my goodness, those guys are the craziest nuts ever.
Yeah, and they were pretty crazy.
Yeah,
but at the same time, they also had fantastic skills.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So their judgment and skills were excellent, and certainly my mission, my goal, if you like, is to educate folk so that they can go and do that crazy stuff,
right,
relatively safely.
Oh, that's great. So now you're on your fifth year with this event. And
yep.
What's coming up this year? What can people expect?
So I'm pretty excited about this year. We've got Justine Kaganvan coming over.
Fantastic.
From the UK. Yeah. And, anybody that's met Justine or watched any of her DVDs knows, what an amazing personality she is. What a really modest and fun loving girl she is. Very, very approachable. So she'll be at the event. She'll be our keynote presenter on Friday evening.
Okay.
Showing some, hopefully some snippets from her new, this is the C5 DVD, and, you know, talking about her exploits, her expeditions, and she'll be teaching on the water as well all 3 days of the symposium.
What you should do is you should get someone in the back of that room, videotape the whole thing, and bootleg it.
There you go. Well, also she's going to be judging a sort of fun competition for us. We're just about to promote this. GoPro have given us a new HD3 camera, which is going to be the top prize for a 5-minute sea kayak video competition.
Really?
So we're going to ask attendees to submit their best sort of 5-minute sea kayak video.
They have to make it over the weekend, or they just submit it from
they need to be attending the symposium.
Like if I was coming to the symposium, I could just bring whatever footage I have from home.
Exactly.
That I piece together now, like I don't have to put it together over the weekend.
Correct.
Okay. Wow, that's great.
Yeah, and so they're going to win a very nice camera. Yeah. And Justine will be the judge for that one. That's going to be a bit of fun on Friday evening. I mean, you know, and we'll show the top five entries on the Friday evening.
That's a great idea.
And then Saturday evening we've got Ken Campbell from the Akatsu project. He's been paddling up in the Pacific Northwest, mapping the debris coming from the tsunami, in the Japanese tsunami.
Okay.
And Akatsu, the Roadless Coast, is a film that he's actually produced along with another guy called Steve. And they've been working with NOAA, actually, sharing in the information, doing beach surveys up on the Olympic Peninsula, on the Pacific Coast there. Super worthwhile project, and you know, some great footage of some awesome paddling locations as well.
That sounds like a fantastic night. Looking at junk on the beach. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sadly, you know, wherever you go now, it's, you know, it's certainly on the West Coast.
Now, are you guys getting a lot of that yet?
Yeah, we are.
Okay.
Yeah, we are. I was paddling today, and a bunch of stuff that you think, I haven't seen the likes of that before.
Okay.
It's for sure it's showing up. He's out there, you know, surveying it with a Geiger counter and, you know, seeing if any of it's radioactive and all that stuff. So, you know, it's really, really worthwhile.
Interesting. And so what's happening during the day? How does it work? So do you have standard, like, hour clinics, or are they there for the morning with people? Like, what happened? How does that work?
So we decided to provide, offer full day classes.
Okay.
Because of the time of year and the venue, really we want to give people a maximum opportunity for learning. So we do all day classes, they range from flat water, essentially forward stroke clinics, to advanced rock gardening out at Point Bonita in the Pacific, Pacific swell and rock gardens. So a whole range of classes from advanced beginner. This isn't a symposium for complete beginners.
Okay.
Because of the time of year, the nature of the conditions, nature of the location, you know, you need to have had some skills training beforehand, but you don't need to be an expert.
Okay.
And on our website, we would like to think a fairly clear way of self-assessing to judge whether you're an advanced beginner, an intermediate, or an advanced intermediate.
Okay.
And then you choose the classes that are appropriate for your skill level, and whole range from riding the tides. We get some strong currents in the bay with some tide races and hopefully waves if the wind is in the right direction. We get some powerful Pacific swells this time of year, hopefully not too big.
Right.
We also offer some surf zone classes as well.
Okay. And you're doing some certification tie-in with the event as well.
Yeah, we are. We've always tried to make it a a sort of cross-denominational event. So it's not just a BCU event or an ACA event. It's a mix of both.
Okay.
And this year we've got an ACA Level 5 instructor certification.
Okay.
Going on after the symposium. We have a BCU four-star training going on during the symposium, a four-star certification going on before the symposium, and a five-star training going on after the symposium.
Oh, wonderful. And what are the dates of this event?
It's January 25th, 26th, and 27th is the main event, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
And where can I go to sign up? Who can I cut a check to?
So it's I just want to point out it is a non-profit event, so you know any profits that we make get reinvested in the event. You can imagine it's pretty expensive to bring coaches across from the UK.
Yeah.
And so you know all any proceeds, any profits from the event get put back into it. But yeah, you go to ggsks.com. GoldGateSeaKayakSymposium.com, ggsks.com.
Cool. Can I rent boats, or are boats provided with the registration?
No, we work with all the local retailers and outfitters.
Okay.
And so there's a list on the website. You know, you just click on rentals, and there's a list of the companies and the models and makes of kayak that they can offer.
Okay.
We've had great support from our local retailers. You know, my own. The shop that I work for, CCK, California Canoe and Kayak, but also Sunrise Mountain Sports has been a huge supporter of the event. Basically, all you need to do is fly into San Francisco Airport. There's a coach that will take you within a mile of the actual venue.
Really?
And then, you know, just give us a call and we'll pick you up from wherever you get to. If we need to pick you up from the airport, we'll do that as well.
That's fantastic. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me today.
You're welcome, David. Thanks for asking.
And that was our fantastic interview, once again given solely by David Johnston with Sean Morley. That was some good reporting there, son.
Well, thank you.
Did you enjoy talking to Sean?
Yeah, I was pretty excited about it.
He's good people.
I always get real nervous talking to all these people who I just see on the Facebook, and they're, you know, the superstars of the world. And then I realized, oh yeah, he just picks his nose as well. So
he puts his pants on just one leg at a time. It's like the rest of us. Yeah. They just fit tighter across the bum with him, I think, you know, because he's a good looking man. And I dig Sean quite a bit. He and I have the same program in the winter. He's a stay-at-home dad. I'm sort of a stay-at-home dad. And, right. Both have a background a bit in law enforcement. He was a cop. We can both understand Ben Lowry first time. So that's good. Mm,
yeah.
But yeah, I'm going out to that symposium. I'm going to be teaching out there. I'm going out for Warner Paddles.
I'd love to go to the Golden Gate Symposium.
If you got a wild hair up your butt and you can make it out there, man, is it a good time. I was out there 2 years ago. The paddling is phenomenal. The company is phenomenal. Sausalita is great. And you're right there at Marin Headland where I think the Mavericks are, right?
Okay.
Yeah, big, big waves out there. And there's just something for everybody. Alcatraz Island, you can paddle around Alcatraz.
That's what I'd like to do.
Yeah, for sure.
Pull up, maybe save some prisoners.
Yep.
Come with me, get on the back.
It's decommissioned, but I'm sure if they're still out there, if Frank...
I saw The Rock. I know how that movie works.
The Rock.
Oh, I saw how they get in. So I always have this vision of, you know, paddling out maybe during a lunch break after going to this and breaking in through the sewers and going up through. And then if they need help with that, busting up those rocket missiles, I could probably help out there.
The VX gas?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and then you can put the atropine right in your chest.
That's my favorite part of that movie.
That would pop the smoke and put the atropine in your chest.
Yeah,
because that
yeah.
works every time. So, but yeah, the Golden Gate Symposium. Back to the Golden Gate Symposium.
Okay,
it's gonna be a lot of fun being out there. So if you get a chance to go out there, by all means, do so. So what else we got to say about this Kayak Mainland? We've been babbling on and on for a bit here.
Yeah, not too much. We covered our news. We got our interview.
We got everything going.
I'm good with it.
Yeah, coming up.
For me, we'll do some paddling for the next couple months. But big event for you would be Golden Gate. The next one for me would be Canucopia in March. So things are quiet till March.
That's right. You're coming to Canucopia.
Oh, yeah.
I am. So, yeah. Are you flying? Are you driving? What are you doing?
Still trying to sort it out. I'm not quite sure. I'm probably going to fly.
Okay.
And then fly into Chicago. But no, I'm speaking at it.
Yeah. That's going to be great. I'm going to have fun. And you're going to come by the P&H booth, correct?
Oh, yeah. I'll be sitting there.
Yeah.
I'll
hack. That's going to be your home base when you're not speaking.
Yep.
Good, because I think you'll have fun with us. You know,
I'm going to bring a whole pile of headshots in 8x10 black and whites and a Sharpie marker. I can sign them and hand them out to people.
I would love that, as long as you sign my name. folks, just so you know, Canucopia comes up in Madison, Wisconsin. It's March, I'm sorry, 8.
Yeah, 8-10.
Yeah, and David and I'm there working for Piranha. David's there obviously speaking. And it's put on by Rutabaga Paddle Sports Shop, which is one of the largest independent kayak dealers in the world. And it's really an entity unto itself. So it's one of those events that before you die as a paddler, you should probably go and see. You're always amazed at how much stuff is there that you can check out and compare and contrast. And beyond the buying process, there's a ton of great instructors, a ton of great speakers, you know, David included. Ben Lowry comes up, Danny Mongo teaches, myself. We all do lectures there. And so you can spend your entire weekend just listening to lecture after lecture after lecture about all these people that you've maybe just heard of. So I highly recommend coming. And then come by and see us at the P&H booth, of course. But yeah, I think we should take that opportunity to do some interviews with some people we don't normally get a chance to see.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah, do a live show.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So that's our March. And I've got, really, aside from Golden Gate, I got nothing coming up until March. I'm very excited about seeing you there. But
yeah,
we'll get Darren Bush on the phone, on the Skype, and see if we can do an interview with him, pin him down.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
And talk about that. So I have got very little else to speak to you and the folks about, other than my love for you and the folks.
You're funny.
I do love the folks. I'm a big fan of the folks. So yeah, that's it for us for tonight for Kayak Mainline. My name is, as always, Kelly Blades.
And my name is David Johnston.
And folks, if you like to watch TV, please don't do it under duress. I don't know what that means. I really don't know what that means, but it was the best thing I could come up with. So, folks, good day, good night. Tip your waitresses, pet your cats, and above all else, don't do anything stupid that you have to name after one of us. Thank you, and good night.
You've been listening to the Kayak Mainline Podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please tell a friend or tell five. This shouldn't be a secret just for us. That thing you did with the German Shepherd, the surgical tubing, and the Bananas Foster, that's probably a secret you want to keep to yourself. But the podcast, let's tell everyone. Thanks for listening. The Sea of Heartbreak.